Pat Henkin is special assistant to the organization with the Toronto Blue Jays. Pat Henkin joined Sherry Ford and myself on the Jeff Blair Show. Pat, thank you so much for doing this. I'll ask you about Marcus Stroman and the strides he's made. This is a guy last year at one point, some people were suggesting, well, he needs to go back to AAA, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. I wasn't necessarily one of them. But, you know, you look at him now, and he's a guy, Pat, who talks about wanting to pitch 200, 220 innings. I look at him and I go, you stay healthy, you'll be able to do that.
Oh, I agree. I mean, he's been on a heck of a run, that's for sure. I mean, I think I read the other day, it's like his ninth start in a row where he's just pretty much dominated. You know, he's a talented guy. We all know what an athlete he is, how he can spin the ball, you know, how he can alter his delivery, mid-delivery. You know, just a talented guy with great movement. You know, he reminds me of David Cohn. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that Coney had that kind of movement. Stroman's actually got more pitches. I charted David Cohn, and watching Stroman pitch, I think he's got probably a second breaking ball that David didn't have. But pretty similar. You know, they were not overly, you know, big guys. You know, Coney was 6 foot, I think. But, Stroman's been great. I mean, he's been awesome. I hope he keeps it going for the next 10 years.
Hey, Pat, Sherry Ford here. Nice to hear your voice again. Power lefty Tim Mayza made his major league debut the other night. He pitched a shutout ninth while allowing a pair of hits. And before the game, he acknowledged that while he was in a car being driven from Buffalo to Toronto to be called up to the big show, that he thought of you and that you were the reason that he actually is here and the advice you gave him when you mentored him down in single-A Dunedin. And you said, get ahead and get out of the middle. And he said that really stuck with him. You've had a huge impact on that young guy.
You know, that's a great compliment coming from him. But let's face it, man, he's the one with the ball. He's the one throwing the ball. I told him something that he's probably heard a million times from other coaches. You know, as a player, sometimes certain things stick. You don't know why. You know, for me personally, something stuck with a comment that Mark Eichhorn made. So, but that's a great compliment from Tim. That's really nice of him to say that. I think the bottom line is he's the one on the rubber. He's the one throwing the ball. He's the one that's got the great talent. You know, when I saw him in Dunedin, he's a tall guy with a high arm slot throwing 94 to 96 straight downhill with a wipeout slider. And I thought, holy cow, you know, this guy's stuff is dynamite. And it was just a matter of him getting it in the strike zone and locating his fastball on the halves and not trying to overthrow. So I just tried to tell him, let's try to be aggressive. You know, get ahead and get out of the middle. Mm-hmm. Meaning get ahead, let's work the middle early because his stuff's so good. He's going to get that foul ball, oh-oh. He's going to get that, you know, check swing or a take. And now all of a sudden you get ahead and now you just get out of the middle. I told him, I don't care what side you go to, buddy. If you want to go to the inside because you feel good on going into the righty, or if you want to go away to the righty, that's up to you. So, yeah, that's neat. I'm really excited for him. I actually sent him a text and said, hey, congratulations, what a great job. I mean, to go from the bullpen in Dunedin last year to the bullpen in Toronto is a great jump and a great, great, great feat.
Pat, is he good enough that he can be more... Again, it's the majors, and I understand there's a transition here, but is he good enough that he can be more than a lefty specialist up here?
Oh, yes. You know, his stuff is off the charts. It all comes down to whether you locate the ball. I mean, you look at a guy like Joe Smith, whose stuff is short, but he locates the ball so well, it makes him super effective and a great one-inning pitcher in the major leagues. And you know, so if Mayza can locate his pitches, the sky's the limit for this kid. I mean, he has got some great stuff. I mean, when he hits on his slider, it's 88, 89. I've seen him throw a slider 90, 91 on a good day when he's feeling good. I mean, imagine trying to be left-handed facing a guy that throws 95. You got to honor that. And now you got to wait on a 90-mile-an-hour slider. And it's coming from the same slot, the same release point, which is important. You know, so you're not slowing your hand up. And very, very tough pitch to pick up if you're the hitter.
Pat, I know you were the bullpen coach up here in 2011, and really not enough can be said about this bullpen this year and the times that they've bailed this team out. And last night, not that they had to bail him out, but what a great show by Dominic Leone. He had, you know, entered in the seventh with one out and the bases loaded. And then, you know, to preserve the lead. And then Ryan Tepera came in and he did three up, three down. I mean, this bullpen has just been lights out this season.
They have. It's been great. I mean, you know, I know they've had a lot of appearances and a lot of innings, but sometimes it's a fine line. If you do too much, it can be detrimental. But if you are at that threshold where the guys are still feeling strong, they're pitching on a consistent basis and knowing their roles. And, you know, Gibby does a great job with the bullpen, in my opinion. So I think that the pitchers know coming into the game, especially even at like 5 o'clock that night, they know, like, they're rested. They're going to probably pitch in this situation if it's tied, if it's, you know, if we're ahead by a run. So that's an important part of the bullpen, those guys knowing their role and being able to do that. And, you know, what can you say? I mean, Dane's done a nice job down there, and Pete's a good pitching coach, and those kids are doing a great job with the ball. I mean, they're the ones that throw the ball. So it's been exciting for sure. And, you know, what's good is they're all young and coming back.
Right. When did the light bulb go on with Ryan Tepera? What happened?
Ooh, I think Tepera had a lot of success in AAA when he was given the ball every other day, every third day, and I think that's pretty much been the key. You know, he's been given the ball every third day here and even more at times, and I think it's just sometimes it's just opportunity. You know, I mean, he's had some opportunity. And he's got nasty stuff. I mean, I know Pete and Dane liked him in spring training. They liked him last year, and forget the velo, man. He can spin the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He can throw that cutter and slider. It's a couple different looks for the hitter, and he's got confidence to throw it 3-2 and 3-1. And it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, I think it's more just getting a consistent chance to pitch has really helped out Tepera.
Joe Biagini is getting developed into a starter down in Buffalo. Obviously, he'll get a shot up here real soon. What can we expect from him? What are you guys seeing down there?
That's a great question. You know, I thought he had some really good starts early on this year when he was given the ball. Coming back down, not having to pitch in the high leverage situations in front of 40,000 people, trying to stretch out your arm and potentially burying the bullpen at the same time. So in Buffalo, more of a relaxed atmosphere. Not that it's relaxed, but you guys know what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
He can, he's going to get stretched out. I mean, he's a four-pitch guy. He's going to have to make pitches. I mean, it's definitely a different feel when you're a starter. You know, I think that, and I hope the relievers don't get mad at me for this one, but you got to be in good shape to be a starter. I mean, you can't, you know, you're going through the lineup 3-4 times, and you're covering first in the sixth inning, and then you're back in a third in the fifth inning, and then you got to get back on the mound and make a good pitch, and you got to see that lineup for the third time through. You know, you got to make quality pitches in the zone because they know what you have. They've seen your stuff. They've seen your spin. And typically your stuff doesn't get better as the game goes on, although sometimes it does. But it usually just kind of stays the same, and the hitters get a good feel for the timing of it. So Joe Biagini, as a starter, is going to have to make quality pitches that second and third time through the lineup.
You know, people talk as well, Pat, about him having to get used to pitching out of the, you know, out of the windup when he was here. I mean, he pitched out of the stretch all the time. In spring training, he used the windup, but even when he was here as a starter, he pitched out of the stretch. For a guy like Biagini, how important is that? You know, is the added force you can get out of the windup?
Yeah, that's a good question. I love throwing out of the windup, and you know, for Joe, I know he's a big shadow box guy, and so was I. And I talked to him about this. He really likes the shadow box for his delivery before the games and stuff. So I think it's important. I think it'd be nice to see him pitch out of the windup. Is it a necessity? No. I mean, you look at some of these abbreviated windups these guys have now where their first step is towards home plate, where when I played, he was behind the rubber. Sometimes guys don't even have a step. I mean, look at Stroh, he's kind of sideways already, and David mm-hmm. Price, and there's multiple guys like that. So I don't think it's the end of the world if he does throw from the stretch. I mean, isn't Darvish still doing it? You Darvish?
Yep, that's true, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, I think in the end, you throw the ball with your arm. And as long as you get good leverage and you stay behind the ball and you use your legs and your core, I think it takes a lot of the toll off your back, your shoulder. And I think that's more important than a windup versus a stretch.
You know, I had a conversation with Jake Odorizzi after his start here on Monday. And, Pat, we were talking about, here's a guy who's 27 years old. He's pitched for the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, he came up early. He's pitched for the Rays, obviously, the whole time. He's pitched in the American League, and we were looking at his numbers. You know, he's made 16 appearances against the Red Sox, 2.58 ERA, 16 against Baltimore, 2.51 ERA, 15 against Toronto, 2.06 ERA, 13 against the Yankees, 3.32 ERA. And we started talking about how, as a pitcher, when you see when teams see a lot of you because you're in their division and you know you've been in the majors for a long time, how you go about, you know, battling through that. I mean, there's so much video out there, there's so much scouting out there now. Here's this 27-year-old kid. There's a ton of info on him everywhere, but especially American League East teams. The Blue Jays has something like 290 career plate appearances against this guy. And it was interesting hearing him talk about how, you know, you go out with a plan, and of course, you know what your strengths are. But he said, when guys see you a lot and you've seen them a lot, sometimes you just, it's almost like you freelance a little bit. You know, it's almost like you, okay, what's this guy swinging at today? What does this guy look like to me today? I've got to go with this pitch. And the reason I'm asking you this, I know it's long-winded, but the reason I'm asking you this is the Jays are going to have Stroman and Sanchez for a while. They're, hopefully some of the young kids will be up here soon. This team is going to have a young rotation at some point in a tough division, Pat. How do you not only allow young pitchers to survive in this division, but to prosper when they're being seen so much by the same teams and the same hitters?
You know, I think the biggest thing is being able to shift on the fly and make those adjustments. In the pitcher for the Rays, he actually commented about it, how, you know, sometimes you got to go with a little bit of a feel. I think what he means is what's working that day. What did the hitter look like? Was he falling off my fastball away? Was he late on it? You know, was he right on top of the ball and pulling me foul? You know, all these types of things that you recognize as a pitcher, and then you put in the fact that, okay, what do I have going today right now? Am I better on glove side? Am I better on arm side? Is my curveball better than my slider tonight? Or is my changeup a factor? These are all things that are running through your mind in the next, and you got 15 seconds to make your decision and throw the pitch. And I think that in order to stay successful in the league, you have to be able to shift on the fly. You have to be able to make those adjustments on the mound. You have to be able to pitch with not your best stuff. And that's the key for the Sanchez's, the Stromans, the Bruckies, the Rowleys, whoever we end up having in the rotation, whether it's Marco Estrada, Jay Happ, or Sanchez or Stroman. The bottom line is these guys are good at shifting on the fly, and I think that that's a big reason why they're successful year after year.
Hey, Pat, Marco Estrada obviously has had an up-and-down season, and it appears that he's found his game again, but Kevin Barker yesterday on Baseball Central brought up the idea that he's had five different catchers this year. Does that have an impact at all on a pitcher's season?
You know, I loved having a certain catcher just because it was just a great feel. It's almost like having a shortstop where you run the daylight play and the pickoff plays. I remember with Alex Gonzalez, I never even had signs. We looked at each other and we knew it was on. Same with Sprague. And that was a big advantage of playing with the same guys for 5, 6, 8 years like we did. The catchers, you know what? You can't get married to a catcher. I'll tell you why. A, a trade. B, an injury. And it's just one of the two always happens. The minute you get married to a catcher and you think, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to follow this guy. If he gets traded, I'm going to go there with him. You know, it just doesn't work. It's yes, it, does it have an effect? It sure does. But you know what? Every major league player has to go through that. That's an excuse in my book. And I'm not buying that. You know, I mean, you make the decision when you're on the mound. He suggests what to throw. You make the decision. So for me, you know, you have to make pitches, whether it's Lopez or Russell Martin or Luke Maley or, you know, Benito Santiago or Charlie O'Brien or Darren Fletcher or Pat Borders. It doesn't matter. You know, you have, and unfortunately, it is important. And I loved having a certain catcher. I'm not going to tell you that it's not. And it does make a huge effect. What guy on the roster affects half your team? Not very many, except for the catcher. So for me, it's in a very important position, but the bottom line is you cannot get married to a catcher.
Hey, Pat, you mentioned Ryan Borecki a little earlier, and I did want to ask you about some of the starting pitching depth in the minor leagues, particularly that group right now, the kind of the double-A group. You know, we've spent a lot of time obviously talking about Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette, and to a certain degree, I guess, Lourdes Gurriel. What is the pitching depth like right now? And of that group, you know, the John Harrises, the Reed Foleys, the Connor Greens, the Bereckis, who do you think is closest to being able to contribute at the major league level?
Well, I mean, if you're going to put somebody in the bullpen from that starting group, I think a lot of those guys could help pretty quickly. As far as coming up and trying to fill in and pitch 6 innings, 7 innings, right now, I mean, I guess you'd have to go with Bruckey because I think he's been the most consistent this year. Again, that doesn't mean that that's going to be the guy, but I can tell you that this year, I think consistency-wise, he's been the best. I did see Foley. I saw Harris, Rios. I seen that whole rotation down there. You know, for me, Foley was under the ball at times, so he's still got some delivery issues with his release point. You know, I think that when I see under the ball, you have to climb over the ball as a pitcher with your hand and throw the ball down. It's almost like a top to bottom. Mm-hmm. You're at the top of your windup in the rubber, but the ball needs to be at the bottom of the zone. And you can't do that if you're under the ball and you're pushing it. So I think Foley's got some issues like that. Harris is working on a two-seamer, so he's going to be still. He still needs more development. Connor Green, for me, is starting to throw a slider. So again, his development is coming, and I think that he's going to have a new look breaking ball this last few starts of the season. And I'm really encouraged to hear and look at it. I haven't seen it yet, but I've heard that it's got some swing and miss to it. And he's not, and he's keeping his hand moving. So I think Borucki, to answer your question, would probably be the closest one at this point.
Pat, do you see, if Connor develops that slider, I'm looking at this guy and thinking, might he be a bullpen candidate with that fastball and slider combination?
Absolutely. I mean, I think anyone that can get 18, 20 outs as a starter can make the transition to the bullpen, you know. So, yeah, there's no doubt Connor could easily step into the bullpen and pitch one inning. And you know what? Someday, who knows? I mean, you hope that he becomes a perennial all-star starting pitcher because it's so hard to develop that and acquire it. But in the end, he could be a major league reliever, and there's great value there and super important role, you know. So only time will tell.